I'm doing well. Is now still an okay time to talk?
It's perfect.
Okay, great. So to start, can you just tell me a little bit about your background in nursing and pain management?
Sure. And Brielle, I just want to be sure I understand. So this is for a podcast and you're actually taping it now?
Yes, yes, that's correct.
Perfect. So the question is my background.
Yep.
I knew that I loved caring for people with cancer from my experiences in nursing school, so that was a long time ago, and essentially I've worked in oncology my entire career. And it became clear in the beginning that people with cancer had insufficient pain control. It was a long time ago, and we really did not do a great job. Mm-hmm. So that has been my passion from the very beginning. I saw some of my nursing mentors who had their master's degree, and it allowed them to have an expanded practice and pursue other kinds of activities that looked exciting, and so I did the same, and I got a master's degree in oncology nursing, and then later was conducting research with a neurosurgeon. We were doing cancer pain trials of new agents, and I was stimulated to get my PhD because I was working with a lot of scientists and physicians and really wanted to understand in greater depth the underlying mechanisms of pain.
Okay. So you mentioned that pain is kind of undertreated in the world of oncology. Can you expand a little bit on that and I guess tell me why pain is undertreated in oncology compared to some other medical fields?
So, sadly, we probably do a better job in oncology than in many other arenas of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when it comes to more of the chronic pain syndrome. And I say sadly, it's a good thing that we do as good a job as we do.
Mm-hmm.
But we have so many complications right now, so many barriers to providing good pain control. And they're prevalent in oncology, and they're really prevalent in non-malignant pain, for example, in people with severe arthritis or severe back pain, etc. So mm-hmm. the barriers include those related to us as healthcare professionals, those related to the system, and then there are barriers related to the patients and their families. So just to give you an example, the barriers related to us as professionals include lack of education, fear of addiction, especially with all the attention to the opioid epidemic now.
Right.
And there are systems barriers. Less time to see each patient, more obstacles related to insurance coverage for treatments, requiring lots of time on the telephone to negotiate for access to pain medicines and access to physical therapy or mental health counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the systems barriers. And then there are barriers our patients and their loved ones bring to the clinic, and they've gotten maybe even more severe than in the past. Again, because of all the media attention to the opioid epidemic, many of our patients are very afraid to take these pain medicines.
Right.
Because they're very concerned about becoming addicted.
Now, do you feel that that concern is kind of blown out of proportion, or do you think that's a real true concern, especially in something like oncology where it might be chronic pain? So there's potential for being on these agents for longer amounts of time.
So you've asked a really relevant question, and this is the challenge for healthcare professionals working in oncology to discern when is this a time-limited pain syndrome associated with their chemotherapy or their other treatment that we can treat very aggressively, and just as we go up gradually on the medications, we come down when, for example,
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that kind of pain syndrome versus the person who now has chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy, and they're going to likely have this. Maybe they've had it for a year. In those situations, it's less likely that it's going to resolve if it's been in existence for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we manage peripheral neuropathy, pain related to post-surgical syndrome, post-radiation syndrome, graft versus host disease? What is the most safe and effective way to manage pain that is going to persist for years or decades? And that is, you've hit the nail on the head. That is our greatest challenge. And then, finally, there's another wrinkle that really needs to be attended to, and that is excellent assessment skills to be able to differentiate the chronic pain versus some of the emotional components versus, is this a recurrence?
Mm-hmm.
Or even a new malignancy. So those are the many challenges that we face in the world of oncology related to pain.
So what kind of steps need to be taken, in the oncology field as a whole to kind of overcome these barriers and figure out what is the best way to treat this pain, be it acute, maybe from surgery, or some of our chronic pain?
So we all need more education about cancer pain syndromes that can occur, and about safe and effective delivery of the medication, including strategies that mitigate the risk of someone misusing these medicines. So we as professionals need to be educated. Patients need to be educated. And we haven't always done a great job helping them understand that, yes, this medicine will make you a little bit sleepy, and so there's an urge to take it at night to fall asleep. But that is going to get you into trouble. These medicines, and I'm speaking of the opioids, should only be taken for pain control. They should never be used to relieve your anxiety, depression, or sadness, or to help people sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essential that we do that kind of teaching so that people don't get into inappropriate or inadvertent behavior. And then, again, the system needs to ensure that we have access to physical therapy because, frankly, for people with chronic pain, physical therapy, occupational therapy, mental health counseling, reframing the meaning of the pain, mindfulness, integrative therapies, all of these are actually more beneficial than using opioids in someone with chronic persistent pain that is going to exist for years to decades.
So what's the role of the oncology nurse in trying to get a patient some of these services, your PT, your OT, your psychosocial therapy? Is it, discussing it with the patient so they can advocate for themselves? Is it kind of haggling with the insurance company? How can a nurse help patients get some of these more different routes of pain management?
So oncology nurses are generally the individuals who are fine-tuning and most adept at understanding symptoms, including pain. And in fact, the team often leaves it to the oncology nurse to be responsible for assessing and managing the individual's pain. When oncology nurses are facing obstacles with access to care, we work with the insurance company. We advocate for the patient. We ensure that we document the need for this care. And sometimes it even means finding community-based services that might provide access that may not be as professional or as useful as physical example, there are wellness houses that offer chair yoga or stretching exercises or other kinds of exercise classes for people with cancer. We can look to community resources like the YMCA, where they offer aqua therapy or other kinds of reduced impact therapies. Again, it's not the same as having a one-on-one with a physical therapist, but looking for these kinds of community-based resources can be exquisitely helpful for patients.
Okay. And what do you hope to see as far as cancer pain management goes in the next 5 or 10 years? Where do you hope that, we are?
I'm hoping that some of the advocacy work that we as nurses and physicians and many of the oncology organizations are conducting will have an effect on loosening up payment through the insurance companies and third-party payers so that we can get access to non-opioid kinds of care. So that's one vision that I have for the future. The second is that when patients truly are in need of medication, it will be seamless, it will be transparent. The insurance companies clearly understand that the person has a cancer diagnosis, they're paying for their chemotherapy. We shouldn't have delays in access to their pain medicines such that we need to fill out a prior authorization request and wait 3 to 5 days for access to their care. So that's a huge barrier for people with cancer. So that's my vision, that these kinds of access issues will no longer be as complicated as they are now, because they're taking us away from the bedside and limiting our time with patients, as we have to spend more time on the telephone with private prior authorization, with the peer-to-peer reviews that need to be done with the insurance company. It means patients don't have access to care that's desperately needed.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to mention?
I would like to see more availability of expertise or experts. I would like to see more access to people who have knowledge of addiction, who could help us when people do have complicated relationships with their opioids, to help us discern the appropriate and safe strategy, both in weaning off of their opioids, but also in strategies for providing good pain control that are not opioid-based.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Judith, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I know you're super busy, and I really appreciate your time.